Hello, everybody. Welcome to the new bonus episodes, or the bonus series, for the second season. I attended the Costa Rican Big Data School, and, you know, I thought that maybe some of you can take some value out of this. You know, many aspiring computer scientists and software engineers would really benefit from the things that they talk about in this event. This was a five-day event from Monday through Friday, from 8 to 4, so it was pretty extensive, and they talked about a lot of different subjects and, you know, very important things that you got to know in this day and age with big data and data science and data analysis. So I thought, you know what? I'll put this up. Maybe some of my listeners can take advantage of this and can benefit from listening to really, really high-end professors from the Texas Advanced Computing Center. So our instructors will be Wei-Ya Xu. He's a PhD and the group lead for Data Mining and Statistics Group. Prior to joining TAC, he obtained a master's degree in biological sciences and a doctoral degree in computer science from the University of Texas at Austin. Then there's also Charlie Day. Charlie Day is the Director of Training and Professional Development with the User Services Group at TAC, with a background in web development and scientific computing. Charlie's responsibilities at TAC include organizing, developing content, and building curriculums for TAC's academic course selection taught in conjunction with several departments at the University of Texas at Austin, as well as for TAC's professional development and educational team. Oh, well. Oh, and just a quick thanks to Danny Xie, who was the one who recorded these segments. Without him, we wouldn't have this awesome bonus round. So thank you very much, and enjoy.
So here's what my final run ends up looking like, and this is with all the interactions. So I look at number six. This is starting with day zero. I should probably put down day zero. Number of people sick is one, and then it goes through and says, all right, person zero interacted with this list of people. Then it goes to person one. Person interacted with these people and just got sick. So chances are high, person number six may have been patient zero. And then it goes through here and said, all right, person two interacts with these people. And it looks like person number six got person two sick as well. And then it goes through here, looks like person three is okay. No, if you notice, person three interacted with person six, but they're still learning. So mind you, this is all day one, right? And then person four interacted with these people. Person five interacted with person two and got sick. And person six interacted with all these people. Person seven, and so on and so forth, right? So we can see who got sick. And now at the end of day one, we have four people sick. And then we start with the next day. Person zero interacted with this list of people. And it looks like person five may have been one of the people that got sick last time. Person five just got person zero sick. And then person one, person two, person three, and so on and so forth. And we're seeing, oh, person seven interacted with person zero and got sick. So now here's the list. Now we're at day two, or day three, probably day two, and the number of sick is eight, and so on and so forth. And by the end of it all, the very end of all the interactions, we had, wrong screen. We had a total days of disease propagation was 9. 10 people got sick, so it looks like that all of our entire population got sick, and therefore the entire population got inoculated as well. I should say the maximum number of people is 10, so 10 people were sick at the same time. There could be situations where you see the number inoculated is 10, but the maximum people that got sick was 8. That would mean that somebody got better before that maximum number of sick people got hit. So we still have some cool data analysis to do. We're going to learn some tools to do that. Okay, it is now 3:24, so maybe about 5 more minutes. I'll show you guys what I did. There's the actual code that calculates this number of sick. You notice this is what object-oriented programming does for us? It makes the code much simpler. It makes the main code much simpler. and it makes it easier to read. So, hey, while my population dot number of sick is greater than zero, print what the number of sick people is, find what the maximum sick is, increase the day, and then update the population. So it's essentially my main code is just one line. It's the while statement, and it's the population dot update. Everything else is just some stats we're trying to gather along the way. But the main code sits right in that object. And this is what object-oriented programming is supposed to do. It's supposed to make your main code easier to read. Just like you're getting into your car, and you put the key in, and sometimes now you don't have to put the key in your car anymore, you just hit the start button. You put the key in, you turn it, that's all it requires. There's a lot going on behind the scenes to get your car to start, but the only thing you're dealing with is just putting the key and turning the ignition. And even that now doesn't happen anymore because my car, you just sit down and you hit the start button. I have two cars. We have three cars. We have two gas cars and an electric car. One of the gas cars is old, and it's like, you know, from early 2000s. And it actually has a key that you put into the thing and you gotta turn it. My wife drove it the other day and she said she just sat in the car for a little bit trying to figure out, all right, well, what do I do now? Because her car is just a little flip switch. Anyways, I hate to admit, but yeah, I've done the same thing too. I've gotten in my car going, all right, now what do I do? All right, 3:26, 2 or 3 more minutes, and we'll see what's going on, and then we can start collecting some data here. Also realize we aren't saving any of our information, all right? So that's something we have to figure out how to do is save our information. If you have yours working already, feel free to run some examples where you're increasing the number of population. So, and then see what your numbers look like. And also, something else with object-oriented programming, when we're first designing our objects, what we talked about is you want an object or a class is a group of related attributes and a group of related methods. So sometimes you have to try and say, where is this method going to be best fit? You know, what class does it best describe? And that could change from person to person. For example, a majority of my code went into the population object. Perhaps with you, the majority of your code went into the people object, and that's okay, or the person object. That's okay. I don't expect everybody to code the same. All right, so let's talk about what we've done so far, okay? So we have our person object, and we have some attributes for person. We have current status, we have day sick, is inoculated, is infected, and interaction. Interaction is a list. I went ahead and removed the is table because I never used it. All right, so is interaction is a list of people that person interacts with. And then we have, where'd it go? I didn't shift it. All right, and then we have a method called infect. And infect takes a number of days and infects that person for that many days, all right? Really what it does is it increments or either sets days sick and then sets if you're infected or not, and then if you're inoculated, it decides, nope, you know what, you can't be infected again. And then we have the update method. All the update method does is it updates your current status, and it updates all of the attributes depending if you're sick or not. So if you are well, and if you're currently well, but now you've become infected, your current status is going to be sick, and you know, you're no longer stable anymore. You don't need that. Else, if your current status is sick, then we're going to go ahead and decrement the number of days you've been sick. And if the days sick is now equal to zero, we're going to say you've now been recovered, you've now been inoculated, so you cannot be sick no more, and you're no longer infected. Okay? All right. With our population, so everybody understand that this is my person object. Your person object could very well be different, and that's okay. My population object. My population object, the constructor, really, it's really the population, it's a collection of people, all right? So there's my people list. It's a collection of people, and I have a total number of people that I'm building, which in this case is gonna be 10, or the default value is 10. So if I send in anything less than 10, it will change its value to 10. If I don't send a number in at all, it will make it equal to 10. Okay, so that's all this does is just make sure that I have a population of at least 10 people. I now have to assign patient zero. Patient zero is gonna be my first sick person in my population. He's the person that should have been, that should have stayed at home and not come to work. He's the student that should not have come to my class and get the rest of the class sick. That's patient zero. Or sometimes it's me. I shouldn't have gone to work or I shouldn't have gone to class. And we're just assigning a random number to who's gonna be sick. And then we're also building how many people are in our population. So I go through here, range, find the person. As soon as that's all built, I will go ahead and infect patient zero for 5 days. And then we have to, we have some little check marks that we have to do. One of them is the number of sick people that we currently have. So I have a method that's the number of sick. All it does is just goes through the entire population and counts how many people are sick and returns that. Also have number of inoculated. Once again, it goes through the entire population list and counts how many people are have been inoculated. Now, here's where I kind of changed things in my head when I actually did it, and that's okay too. So my update method, all it does is it contacts interact, because I was looking at it going, you know what, it might be a little simpler. And unfortunately, sometimes if you're trying to simplify things, you actually make it harder. Sometimes it's better to split things up into two pieces. So maybe I should have kept my update and split up my interact into two pieces. But what interact does is this is basically what's hidden behind the covers. This is where the meat of the program really lays. Because everybody interacts with somebody, and if they interact with somebody who's sick, now they can get sick. So I'm setting my person index equal to zero because I'm iterating per person. And for every P that is inside my people list, I am gonna first print out who it is I'm messing with. I'm messing with person index. In this case, first person is zero. And I'm building who he has interacted with. Now I'm not changing it. So if I interact with you, that you also interact with me. So I'm disregarding that little bit of the simulation. Some people I've noticed actually put that into their models, and that's fantastic because it makes your simulation a bit more accurate. So I'm building 10 people. So I'm going from high range, 0 to 10. And now I'm building getting a random number, and I'm just appending to the person.interaction. Remember, that's each person has an interaction list. That's their interaction list. I am putting in that person. Remember, In a list of items, in a list of objects, each item inside that list is of that type object. So interaction, I'm appending each person that person interacts with. And so then I'm just doing a little print statement. It's a sanity check to make sure my program's working. So I'm saying, all right, person zero interacted with, and gives me a list of people they interacted with. Now here is where I'm looking at to see if that person is sick or not. If that person, remember, this is a person object, and one of the things inside that person object is that attribute called is infected. So I'm checking to see, is that person object infected? And the person who owns the list, so let's call him Joe, if Joe interacted with somebody who is infected, and Joe is not inoculated, and Joe is currently not sick, now Joe has a chance of being sick, right? So we're looking at the bad luck, pulling up a random number, and if that random number is greater than 9, we are infecting Joe, and then we have a little sad face because Joe got sick. And we don't need to check it anymore because he can't get infected more than once, so I'm just breaking out of the loop. And now, technically what I should really do is put this update in here. But now, for every P and cell person, I'm updating the entire population. So every person is now being updated with their new status, if they got sick or didn't get sick or whatnot, okay? And then I'm just increasing my person index, and I'm looking at the next person. And then I'm gonna update that person, and then I'm gonna look at the next person. Who did that person interact with? And then I'm gonna update him, and so on and so forth. I'm gonna go through the entire population I'm going to find out who they interacted with, and then I'm going to update that person individually. So that is where the meat of the program is. And so now, when we run our actual code, all our actual code does is this while statement. While the number of people are sick or greater than zero, keep calculating. Keep updating my population. So now population's been updated, it keeps going through every person until nobody's sick anymore, and then I get some statistics. So when we run this, because of all the sanity checks I have in there, it's kind of difficult to read because I have each individual list who's getting infected by who. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and comment those lines out. So we'll comment that print statement, comment that print statement, and we'll comment out that print statement. Print statements are nice because, like I said, they're sanity checks. So to make sure your code's working, and they help you debug to realize where your code might be failing at. All right, so I'm going to rebuild all this and run it from scratch. I'm just going to hit run all. Now, it's still telling you what days there are. So we have one person sick on day zero, and it kind of has this little curve, a little bit, then drops down a little bit and then goes back to one. So you see that? That is almost a perfect bell curve that we're looking at, which kind of tells us that our model actually works. The total number of days that the disease propagated for was 15. The maximum number that I had got that were sick at any one time or any one day was 8. And then the total population we got inoculated is 10. So we can keep running this. Let's run it again. This time the disease did not last as long. It only lasted for 11 days. And the maximum people that got sick was 9. So one extra person got sick on a day. And once again, the entire population got inoculated. Right? And so we can keep running this over and over again and see what things look like. So now, let's increase our population size to 100. Now if you look at it, the maximum number of people that were sick on any given day was 85. Total disease that propagated for was 16. And once again, all 100 people in my population got inoculated, which means everybody got sick. So we can keep running this, and sometimes you'll see a case where not everybody was inoculated. Oh, see, like this case, only 99 people got inoculated, which means one person got away without ever getting sick. They may have been, luck was on their side every time. But if you notice, we still have that nice, pretty dull curve, which is exactly kind of what we want to see. So things we want to capture from this data is we want to capture on a day-to-day basis how many people got sick. All right, so we can actually do some analysis. We want to capture how long did the disease propagate for. We want to capture how many people are in our population, and then what percentage of the population actually got inoculated. So those are the data sets that we want to capture. And you know what? For the fun of it, I'm going to increase that to 1,000. Once again, we have that really cool looking bell curve. 998 people, so 2 people got out scot-free without having to get inoculated. 818 people maximum sick on one given day, and the disease lasted for 20 days in our population of 100. Now, there's also going to be a couple sweet spots that we're going to see. We can now, since we have that attribute called isInoculated, we can also go through there and randomly set up how much of our population we want to vaccinate. So, let's say if 20% of our population is already vaccinated, that means they would never get sick. How many people would get sick in any given day? So essentially, if they're inoculated, they're infected would be false, but inoculated would be true. So those two numbers, they never got sick because they're inoculated to begin with. Those are the things that we want to add, and basically those are the things that you should set up for your data runs. Because what we're going to do next is we're going to learn how pandas work. And so pandas is a way of doing data analysis using basically data files or CSV files. They're standard tables that you would build in Excel or something. And we're going to go ahead and save our data to files. We're going to call it in using pandas, probably tomorrow afternoon. We have the time now. And then we'll go ahead and do some cool graphs using matplotlib and see what the graphs look like on how the bell curves look, what happens when we start inoculating our population. is it possible that maybe if we inoculate too many people, you know, something cool is going to happen? Or if we don't inoculate enough, can we shrink that amount of time that it takes for the population to get healed? Can we set up this total number of disease propagations we want to try and shrink? And what would be the best way of going about it? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and save this as a JSON file into our folders. That way you guys can access them. I think what we can do as well is, for people who are using the DesignSafe Jupyter Notebook, if you go into normal DesignSafe and sign in, it'll create a folder for you, and you guys can save your data, and it will not disappear. Until, I'm curious to know what happens with temp files in DesignSafe. So, okay. All right, any questions? Did anybody come up with something really different that gives you some better results, or looking at it going, wow, these results are pretty cool? All right, anybody want to share what their update routine acts like or looks like? All right, so let's go ahead and start thinking about how you're gonna run these simulations, and we're gonna run these simulations tomorrow. We're gonna vary our population size, because now, honestly, if we really wanted to, I can put this entire bit into one, not Joe, this bit. I can put this inside of a code, right? And I can just increase my population by a factor of, say, 100 or a factor of 10 every time, and keep running it over and over again, and save those results on who's sick when, and build a big giant data set of how many days people have been sick, what day they were sick, maximum numbers, number inoculated, and we get something really cool going. Okay, so like I said, I will save, before we leave today, I will save this as a JSON file. If you guys didn't get yours to run, you can play with mine. If you got your own code to work, perfect, go with it, because it's probably better than my code. All right, are there any questions? All right, so next thing what we want to talk about is, so we're going to go through a kind of a rundown on pandas. Has anybody used pandas before? Has people used pandas already? Fantastic. And you guys probably know a little bit more about pandas than I do. I use pandas on kind of just a general basis just to get some quick information and some quick statistics from my data frames, all right? So. For those of you people not in the know, which is okay, because for a long time I wasn't in the know either, is what is it? What's pandas? So remember we introduced NumPy. NumPy is a module for Python that gives us this numerical library that we can basically run a lot of, gives us access to all math libraries. Pandas is very simpler. It's a software library for Python that allows for data manipulation analysis, all right? In particular, it gives you a data structure that we can use, and then a bunch of operations for those data structures to be able to manipulate those, build time series, and whatnot. Okay, so the primary data structure in pandas is the data frame. The data frame, essentially, what it is, it's a row column table. You know, you can add more things to it, but at the essence, it's just columns and rows. All right.
Okay, so yeah, they're just columns and rows is what we're looking at. And they give you kind of a dictionary-like, so very similar in Python, we have dictionaries. It's a dictionary-like look and feel to them. So anybody who's used the Python dictionaries already will be very familiar with this.
Okay, so I just realized the next thing I'm going to do is do some hands-on stuff. All right, so to get pandas going, we need to import pandas into our Jupyter Notebook. So I'm gonna go ahead and close this Jupyter Notebook out. Okay, great. Now I'm gonna go ahead and say, okay, first thing we need to do is import pandas. Once again, you can just keep it as pandas, or you can go ahead and alias it as something else. Aliasing just makes it easier to read. So import pandas as PD. So that gives us all the libraries and stuff that we're going to need to work with. First thing we're going to do is we're just going to create a quick little series of numbers. All right, just a really easy little data set. using pd pandas.series and then essentially give it a list. So we can do, you know, pd s equals pd.series, and then we could just give it a series of numbers and go from there. So data set and function. All right, so if you look at it, pandas is obviously an object, and series is obviously a method inside of it. And we're creating S. So this is a module, and inside the module, it contains a lot of objects, and inside the object, we have methods that we're gonna be using. So if we print out S, it gave us series of numbers. But if you notice, it gave us more than just a series, right? It didn't just give us a list back. It gave us our list and a index next to our list. And then also told, you know, we have a type, integer 64. If I went ahead and put in something else in here, notice it now changed my type to float because I entered in a float in there. So as soon as you put in that first float, it looks at the rest of your data frame or the rest of your series as a float as well. Very similar to what we saw yesterday. Okay, what's also kind of cool is we can now do, with our simple sets, we can do date ranges. We can tell it to split a date up into multiple ranges. So I'm gonna give it a date of like 2018, January 1st, 2018, and tell it I need, for that 1 month, I need a period of six, and it's gonna give me 6 days after that, all right? So I can say, all right, dates equals pd.dateRange. And if you hit tab, by the way, it's going to definitely fill that out for you. So date range. And we give it our starting date, 2018, 0101. And then how many periods we want. And say if we want six. And let's print out our dates. So now, it gave us a date time index, and it gave us essentially a series of dates, right? And if you notice, there's six of them, so I asked for six, so it gave me the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and the six dates, right? Nothing too exciting so far. It all kind of sees how it goes. But what's really kind of neat is I can say, you know what, those dates you just gave me, let's use those as an index. So if I were to say, all right, let's create a data frame with random, So now let's say we want to create our data frame, and it's going to be random numbers, random numbers, you want, I do need NumPy to create random numbers because I want an array, not just simple random. NumPy as np. Because if you notice, my random number is actually giving me a matrix of numbers, which is what I want. I don't want just a simple, I don't want a simple list of random numbers. I actually want a matrix of it. So I'm going to ask for 6x4 matrix of random numbers, and then I'm indexing on dates. I'm going to add a list for columns. And we're going to put everything into our data frame. So df is going to be our data frame. We're going to create pandas pd.dataframe, which essentially defines what it is. What are we going to fill our data frame with? Well, I'm going to fill it up with random numbers. All right. How many do I need? I need a 6x4. Why? Because I'm going to index this on these dates that I just created. And what am I going to have as columns? Well, columns, I'm just going to say, you know, make the columns equal a list. So columns is going to be a list, and what's going to be inside my list? I'm just going to put A, B, C, D, you know, just for column names. Two parentheses. All right. Now, let's look at what that data frame looks like. So now that is what it created me. It gave me the 6x, the random numbers, 4x6 random numbers that I wanted. It went ahead and gave me columns A, B, C, and D, because that's exactly what I asked for. Columns equals list A, B, C, D. And then I told it to use the dates as our index, so that's what it put on the left-hand side, was the dates for the index. If I took that out, it should just default to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? Because that's what the column, the row number is. But essentially, if we had a list of items that we wanted to use as our index instead, you know, we can do that. All right. So now we have a little table of random numbers. So now the question is, well, what can we do with our random numbers? Well, we can break that up, and we can tell our data, we can categorize our data. So we can add a categorical level to each one. We can say, hey, you know what? I want the data frame to look and act in a specific way. So I'm gonna have columns A, B, C, D, E, and F, all right? A is gonna be the number one all the way across. B is gonna be a timestamp, and the timestamp is gonna be, you know, whatever date we decide to put in there. C is gonna be a series, and it's gonna be a series of numbers from one to four, and they're all gonna be, you know, type close. D is gonna be an array, and it's just gonna be some array that you're gonna calculate for me. E is gonna be a category. It's gonna be test train, and F is just gonna be the string foo. So we can do that. We can actually design what we want our entire table to look like in our data frame, okay? So we can also do other things, of course. I don't really want to type all that in, but I could if you wanted me to. But essentially what it'll do is create this really simple little data frame with those columns like I just said. All right, we can move around our data frame as well. We can also, my favorite, and this is what is gonna be useful for our data set that we're building with our disease propagation, is describe. Describe now tells us, hey, column A, this is how many things we have in there. We have count, column A, we have count, what the mean is, what the standard is, what the min is, what 25% of it is, 50% of max, 75% of max, and what the max value is. So, and it'll give us that information, what the standard deviation, min, 25%, 50%, 75%, and max, for each one of our columns that we put in there. Of course, that's not quite what we're gonna look at, especially for our elements. We're just essentially gonna have a run index, and then what all the values are for the runs. So we kind of wanna flip that. So we can say let's transpose that and see what it looks like. So now by transposing it, this is more of the kind of information we would like to see. We want our independent run times to be run ID, the run that we just made, all the data that we covered for that run, run ID, all the data we covered for that run, and so on and so forth, for each individual. Now if we do a DFT dot describe, it'll go through there, and for each run that we have, it will tell us what the statistics for it are, giving us a little bit more information that we want to use for our particular case, which is analyzing our disease propagation model. All right. We can also, you know, pull out the individual columns. We also just look at the first or the first few, or that's what head does. So head looks at the first element. If we gave it a number, it'll look at the first number of elements. Tail gives us the bottom number of elements. We can look at what the column names are, what the different values are. We can have to describe that we already did. T, that transposes it for us. We can give it a different sort, so we can tell it which axis we want to sort in. And then we can also sort it by particular values, which column we want to sort the values by. All right. We can also select information by labels. So we give a particular, maybe I should have ran that, because this is actually what it goes against. So there's our little data set that I created and told you exactly what I did. A is going to be one, B is going to be a particular date. C in this case is just that series, but gave us one all the way across. E gave us different values for a category, and then F is foo, right? Some of the things that we can now do is we can actually locate particular IDs, so we can say, all right, you know what? Ask for particular values, and it'll give us what particular values are. Unfortunately, everything came back as O2, so they didn't, you know, which columns are going to return that. I have a better data set coming up here. So we can essentially select our data by labels. We can also, because this is Python, because it's essentially at the heart of it is kind of a list, we can also go through there and get our indexes. So there's iloc, which gives us the index location. There's dotloc that gives us the actual location by a column or by value. We can look at particular cells by doing iat. So iat, we can just give it the row and column that we want to look at, and it'll give us that particular value back. We can also do slicing, same way we can do with NumPy arrays and with lists. We can go ahead and pull out specific items from that. And then, of course, we can manipulate CSV files. This is where it comes into a lot of fun, actually. This is what I actually want to pull up. This is a much more fun data set to play with. So this creates me two data sets. It actually also writes everything to a file for me. So df to CSV writes our data to a CSV file, and then read from CSV brings that data back. All right. CUM, SUM is a cumulative sum. So I'm basically building this data set that we're going to look at a little bit here. I'm first building a series. The series is going to have a date range, and it's going to have 1,000 periods in it. And I'm filling it with random numbers. Okay. Then I'm building my data frame, and I'm giving it columns A, B, C, D, and E, and I'm telling it the index is going to be this time series I just created. All right, so this is the time series I just created, and I'm telling it to use that as my index. So here is what my data frame looks like. So I have my days, it's split into 1,000, so there's all my time series data that's going in there for particular days. It's making a cumulative sum of each random number as they're being generated and adding those all together. And so it's basically just kind of going in there and filling it up for me. Oops, too close, too much. And I'm able to take that data frame and write it out to a CSV file. If you also want, you can also take that data frame and write it out to a JSON file. And a JSON file is a lot easier to use when you want to do some different kind of manipulation to it. But CSV is going to work great for our examples here. So now, once we have that, okay, great. We have a bunch of cool data here that we can play with. What can we do with it? Well, what do we want to do with it? We want to query that, right? So it makes querying data actually really easy, especially for the newest version of Pandas. We can just say dataframe.query, and we can give it a string of what it is we want to query on. So if I wanted to do a dataframe dot, make sure I call it df. Yes, df.query. And what do I want to query? I want to say a is greater than 10, and say, I'm not sure if this is actually out there, but let's say and b is less than 10. Nothing there. How about b greater than 10 as well? Nothing. A and b greater than 10? A is less than 10. B is greater than 10. Oh, there we go. That'll work. Because, all right, so there's all the numbers where a is less than 10 and b is greater than 10. Right, and it selects those out. Of course, there's 127 rows. Originally, there's what, 1,000 rows? Yeah, originally there's 1,000 rows, so I queried that out for me, and I got a better data set that I can mess with, right? So we can make these little Boolean queries easy enough, and we can go as far as we need to, and C is less than 0, let's say. All right, so NC is less than 0. So we got now down to just a few that we can actually look at if we wanted to manipulate it more. All right, now also, we can also just because, and I can't spell just because. Yeah, let's fix that. Just because. Because why not? Because we have lambdas, why can't we use a lambda expression? We certainly can use a lambda expression. In fact, we could put that directly into a location. We can say, hey, df, data frame, dot location, lambda, df, df dot b greater than 10. And you'll go through there and run a lambda expression on my data frame. So essentially I just created a function that takes a data frame and return a bunch of columns, which is kind of cool. At least I find that kind of cool. All right, so the other thing that we can do, of course, this is pandas. This is essentially a way of manipulating data. Eventually, we want to be able to save our data or join data sets together. So let's create a few data sets that are going to be hard coded together. Obviously, we aren't going to do that. So I create a data set here, meaning what our data sets are going to be coming from our program. It's going to create a data frame and append files to it and write it out to a CSV file. But listen, just for the sake of looking at some data, let's go ahead and join some data together. So let's do that one. Let's do another data set. So we have data set A, let's start data set B. All right, so there's data set B. We have a bunch of IDs, we have a bunch of names, and of course, we have our index is the row, right? And I think I have a third one as well. Yes, data frame N. Okay, so those are our data sets. We have a subject ID, a first name and a last name. We have another subject ID, first name, last name, and then we have a subject ID and a test ID, all right? So essentially it's a relational table, right? So now what we want to do is we want to be able to join it. So we can do, there's a bunch of different ways of doing joins. We can join on rows. So if we did this, we're just concatenating DFA and DFB. So there is our concatenated rows. So essentially, we just took all of data frame B and just appended it to data frame A. So there is our first join. Notice though, our index repeats, okay? Just like we expect it would. Then of course, we can join our columns as well. So what I'm saying here is let's concatenate a data frame, and we're going to concatenate A and B, and we're going to do that on column one. Whoops, it didn't like that. There we go. All right, so I can do a panda, I can concatenate, and I can tell it how you want these things to join. Now I'm saying, all right, concatenate them not by row, but concatenate them by columns. So now I have, this is data frame A on the left, and then on the right, we have data frame A, and they just kind of join them together that way, all right? We can manipulate our data. We can now also merge. So PD merge merges our data sets together. Now, once our data set's been merged, now look at it. We're saying, all right, here's DF new. All right, so DF new is up here. And DFN, which is what we're going on. And then we're going to merge DF new, and we're going to merge those on subject ID. So now our subject ID has been merged, and of course now we have new columns as well. All right, so now we have name. So if you look at what we have, new was our test ID, right? Or DFN is our test ID. DFA and DFB were all the names, and then when we did a complete merge on those, it took DF new, which was this guy, all right, with all the names in them, and it took DFN, which all the tests in them, and it merged them on subject ID. So now we have our query table on those two. And that was essentially our outer join, all right? We can also do outer joins. So outer join will now take everything on DFA, and if there's no math, and if there's no matching thing on DFB, it's going to go ahead and create a new column here. So every single column we have, it goes ahead and adds them, and then puts in blanks, puts in the NANs for where the blanks are. So you see, by the way, this one, because that it shares a subject ID, let's go back to our original data set, you notice that Brian Black and Ayang Aches has the exact same subject ID of 5, right? So when we did our outer join, those guys got connected to on that subject ID with number 5 where everybody else has a bunch of holes in their data set. Now, holes in your data set, I'm sure you guys understand, holes in your data set aren't necessarily bad. In fact, one thing you do is you can build a data cube, all right? So I used to be a SQL guy, and way back in the day, I did a lot of database programming. And I would take all my different runs, especially my scientific runs on cancer, and you build this big giant data cube, right? And each data set that was flattened out and put into the cube had all the attributes of the object inside of there, all right? So every so essentially what I can do is I can go in there, I can pull out any one of those data sets, and I can rerun my simulation from that data set onward, because it had a list of all the attributes of the cancer object. I had all the cell counts, all the medication levels, so I could essentially take any one of these runs out. I could modify, let's say I'm watching the cancer grow and I see that the cancer's starting to grow really quickly. I could build my cube, take it where it happened really quickly, change the medication level, and then run from that point onward instead of having to go back and run my simulation from zero. So inside a data cube, you will see a lot of empty spaces. Of course, if we do an outer join, we can also do an inner join. Anybody want to muster a guess how we do that? So we do merge DFA and DFB on subject ID, and then we say how equals outer. Anybody want to guess how we do an inner join?
Inner.
How equals inner. Look at that. Now we do an inner join, of course. It takes out only where the subject ID and, I guess there was two subject IDs that matched. You had Alice Oney and Billy Bonder as well, and therefore gets rid of all your holes and just where the IDs are equal, just where subject ID is equal and data exists, where it actually fills in your data set. All right, so we can do inner joins. We can also do right joins. Anybody want to guess how we do a right join? Change that how equals right, and now we can do a right join on there as well. And same thing with left joins. We can just make our join equals left.
Right join and left join.
And it pulls in and does a left join for us. Okay, so this is kind of just I know we kind of ran through pandas a bit quick, but yeah, so this is what pandas can do for us. And of course, it does a lot more things too. We all the SQL style joins, SQL style appends. We can do groupings. We can reshape our data set as well, just like we can reshape our matrices, just like we can reshape our arrays. We can reshape our data here. We can create pivot tables. We can do Boolean indexing, like I showed you guys, and just some really quick statistical operations. There is a lot more besides just those. So anyways, I kind of want to give you guys time to do some runs on your simulation and see if you can save those as CSV files. There's a couple examples of how we created CSV files from our intro to Python a couple days ago that shows you how to create CSV, how to write those to a file. So you can write those to a file that way, or you can create a data frame and append your data that way and write your file that way. All right? Are there any questions? All right, since we still have about 10 minutes left of class today, let's go ahead and run some simulations and get some data that we can do some pretty graphs on tomorrow when we go through Matplotlib. Okay, cool.
Thanks, guys. I wish my students back in Texas would applaud. That'd be a great way of ending class.